Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Welcome, everyone, to another special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. We're definitely in the senior citizen range because we're at episode number 70. We're creeping there to 100. But to mark this crossover number, we got a special guest. Know her. She's on Legit MTG doing the Deck Tees podcast. We got Erin Campbell here.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing great. Glad you could join us.
I am so happy to be here. You have no idea. I've been talking about it like relentlessly the last couple days.
Yeah, and I don't even understand why we're not that great of a podcast.
As Ryan put it, I don't know why people like us.
I just have a lot of respect for you guys because you're established. Like I enjoy the show to begin with, but you know, there's something to be said for a show that's long running and successful. And even if you don't necessarily care for the content, which some people may not, you can't take it away from people that they're doing good work and that they are successful. So that's kind of how I feel.
Well, thank you.
When you figure out the recipe for how we did that, let us know.
Yeah. Well, Marcel alone, like I didn't realize, I've never heard his voice. I've heard his voice before, but it's different when I'm on a headset. Like he's really smooth. Like I'm kind of.
Oh yeah. Marcel's got the
voice. He could give me a run for my money.
I think the recipe starts and ends with Marcel.
Well, yeah, you got a hell of a podcast yourself. I mean, you're able to get John Finkel, Brian Kibler. Like, yeah, we don't have those names coming out here.
It's surprisingly easy. I actually just recently asked Reed Duke, and Reed Duke sort of turned me down. Like he's very professional, and I guess he's getting ready for the Pro Tour and whatever his weeks before the Pro Tour are made up of. And he was like, you know, yeah, I'd really love to come on your show. I've heard good things. He's like, I just don't do interviews before a Pro Tour. So he was like, you know, please contact me after the Pro Tour, and I would love to take you up on your invitation. So that was good. I was very happy about that. But I,
so you're saying we should ask people if we want them to be on our podcast.
I mean, you say, you know, I guess looking back, we have had some pretty cool guests that just ask them on wherever, and sometimes they say yes. I mean, ask me a year ago if we would have had if. A year down the road, we would have had Marshall Sutcliffe, Conley Woods, Gavin Verhey, all these people on the cast. Like, I wouldn't have thought so.
Well, those are all people I knew beforehand, so sorry.
Yeah. It's surprisingly easy. Like, that's the number one question I get asked is like, you know, is it hard? How do you do it? The hardest part is not getting them to say yes. It's usually scheduling. Like, Finkel was in from the first message. Ryan Kibler was in from the first message. Jackie Lee was down from the first message. You usually just spend a month just trying to like pin them down and get the schedule right. With Jackie, I had to wait for a GP and the Pro Tour. Kibler, just a month just because he's so busy and didn't check his messages. So I was harping on him a little bit. That's really the only hassle, but if you can like word your invite well, they're in from the get-go. It's really not that difficult.
Have you ever got any firm no's or anything that was a little bit kind of rude? Or
no, never. Really? Never. Hmm. Yeah, I've been really, really lucky. Other than Reed with the just not right now. otherwise, no, it's always scheduling. Wizards PR is a bit annoying to deal with, but that was never a no. It was always just they wanted more answers out of you and things like that.
Yeah, I hit Wizards PR twice, and maybe Helene, she could help us, but I tried to get Aaron Forsythe on the cast, and they just would not respond to my email. I don't know if we did something wrong with Gavin on last time we had him, but we might be blacklisted here, guys.
Yeah, no, I never had their problem. It was just, I find Wizards PR to be so interesting because, I don't know what PR does to them, but like they are scared shitless of PR. Like I have friends at Wizards who won't even say the names of people who work at PR. They're like, I just don't want to know. I don't want them to know I said their names. And I'm convinced that they're all like these scaled hooves, breathing flames and wings, scary demons. And, it's just interesting to see these people be like, I don't want PR to know I'm doing this. And they got some crazy powers from what I hear.
Yeah, Garfield sold his soul to the devil back in the 90s. Like, you can have 25 years of prosperity for your card game, but you must let my minions work in your PR department and sue artists.
Yeah, I'm convinced that they're like, they all look like...
It's probably not PR. Just
I'm convinced that they all look like the card Withengar Unbound. Like, they're just these really creepy devils, and it's kind of strange. I don't know what they do to those poor people, but PR definitely has a lot of power at Wizards.
Okay.
Now that you guys have trashed something I went to school to study, let's move on.
We love wizards. We do. There's nothing wrong with wizards.
Did you go to school for PR or for were you studying wizards?
I went to school for PR and journalism.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
Don't lie to him.
Nerd!
I chose to go with the journalism rather than PR after I graduated, but...
Well, this is a magic podcast, but well, before we get into some magic stuff, we do want to announce the winner to our beer contest that we had. I don't know if you know Aaron, but we had Michael Botica and Slick Jagger on the cast, and they're gonna do a brew for us. They're gonna come up with their own custom brew, and we had a vote. So I guess
all right, drum roll. That doesn't sound like drums. I'm sorry, guys. I failed.
Dun dun dun. The Black IPA has won.
Oh.
Followed by the IPA and the stout. And at the
Corbin's
bottom.
Never had a Black IPA and he's booing. Boo, it's not Bud Light with lime.
That doesn't sound like Bud Light with lime at all.
It sounds like the opposite.
It sounds like a real beer. That's correct.
So thank you everybody for voting. We were overwhelmed by the response.
Actually, that's not even Jason being Jason. We actually were really happy with how many people wanted to put their input in on that.
Yeah, we had almost 175 people. We really didn't know that many people listened to the cast, so it was pretty awesome. So thank you.
Yes, thanks everybody for voting. So we will be we'll just be periodically updating you with the status of the beer, where and when you can get a bottle for yourself, and thanks everybody for voting.
Well, where they could get a bottle at, we talked with them, and they're gonna do it at GP Montreal. So when we all go out there, if everyone doesn't know, it's going to be the new GP Vegas. If you want to go to one GP next year and you want to do your coming together of magic people, you got to go out there to Montreal. We're going to go do actually the drunk date train. If you ever listen to the A-Team, they got the plan figured out, and we're all coming together with heavy meta, and it's going to be an awesome event. So we're going to go from Toronto, catch a train to Montreal, and do GP Montreal out there. So if you guys want to get involved, hit us up, whatever. Brainstorm Brewery, Heavy Meta SUV, A-Team, it's going down. And that's where you could get the Black IPA.
Is that how we're driving there, the Heavy Meta SVU SUV?
I think so.
It's, yeah, the Canadian version of Vegas, I'm told. So,
oh, my goodness.
This trip will be really exciting for me because I am, like, half Canadian. My mom's family all lives in Canada, but I've never actually been to Canada in 25 years of life. So this will be fun.
Wow, it's just like returning to the motherland.
See, that would be impressive if you lived in Michigan. But I can understand living way down there now, but having been to Canada.
Yeah, I mean, I actually have, like, tons and tons of family who, you know, live in Canada or, you know, just speak French or all these things that I've never met or seen or anything like that. I don't know if I'll get a chance to do that in Montreal, but it will be cool to go to Canada.
No, so nobody will speak to you.
Will you be able to make it out to Canada, or is that too far?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually don't have any vacation time left for the year, so if I were to go, I would not get paid for it.
It's in March of 2014.
Really? Wasn't there one recently? I could have sworn there was one this year.
Probably was. I didn't know.
Did it just happen? Okay. What's the format?
It's sealed.
Nope, not going. Nope, not a fan of Aero Seal.
We're all planning on going and we don't know the format, and that's not really gonna matter.
Yeah.
No.
We're not going to play Magic. Corbin might. Hey guys, I played Magic for 72 hours and I won $300. It was awesome. GP Vegas is the best. Well, keep it quiet. I gotta go to bed. I got day two in the morning.
Jason, you're just saying that because you scrubbed out. You know?
I didn't scrub out. I opened a foil sword of fire and ice and like, yay, I top aided.
I stayed up till like 4 a.m. having a good time. Then I went to bed. Then I got up in day two.
Yeah, you crushed day two on like no sleep. That was pretty impressive, I'll be honest.
To be honest, most people probably didn't sleep who were in day two. So yeah. It was an equal playing field.
Corbin was literally one game away from the Pro Tour, so.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
One game, not one match. One game, because I had a draw. But, you know,
I was two. I was two, but still, that's not one. So. It was a great time in Vegas. But, you know, again, Vegas was excellent, but what really made Vegas was the times that we spent not at the GP. And I think that's going to be the same for GP Montreal, so, you know.
If you go to one Grand Prix next year in North America, make it that one.
So as far as experiences, you guys want to talk about your Theros experiences at this Limited?
That never happened.
As my friends would say, that bitch.
Please tell us, let us know what happened.
I just feel like they basically took Bant Hexproof and made it a playstyle. Like, a lot of the decks that I ran into, it was take one creature, fill it with enchantments, and call it a day. Like, yeah, Anax and Thymine, Scourge Mark, Ordeal of Erebos, Heroic, Trample, go. And the removal is so terrible in the set where unless you're dealing with Anax and Thymine on turn one, when they start whacking off with all their enchantments, what do you have? Like, what are you gonna do? Save up four and a black for a whip, which, the lash, that's not gonna do anything if they're heroic to all get out. And, you know, the anger of the gods, too bad. They've already got too big of, you know, their toughness is too high. Like, that's just a lot of what I ran into, and that's not fun to me. That's not, you know, I took a while to get used to Sealed, where I was having to learn the rules of Bread and your curve and things like that. And I felt like I was really ready for that. Like, I was a good girl. I had my 2 drops, my 3 drops, my 4 drops, my 5 drops. I was really good. And there were people that were carving out entire curve, parts of their curve for enchantments. Like, I have 2 drops, no 3s, no 4s. Those are all enchantments. 5, 6, and you're just like, what? Like, it just changed the rules for me at a time when I really felt like I was finally learning the rules. And it's a slower format, but what people are doing when they finally get to playing, you have very few answers for, and I didn't enjoy it at all. I actually dropped, which I never do. I didn't like it.
Whoa. When did you drop it? What round?
Round 3. We were doing 4 rounds, and after round 3, when I played Mr. Agent of Fates, I was like, I'm not having fun. So.
Yeah, that kind of mirrors my experience. Like, I played in the Midnight pre-release. I went, 3-0 and then drew the last round to get the max prizes. The second pre-release I did, I drew the finals. The last pre-release I went 3-2, and I didn't really enjoy it. Like, I mean, I guess I had fun because I was playing Magic, but it's the same experience. It was like Avacyn Restored 2.0, where there's very little interaction. And it's like, there's literally like no downside. I hated Bestow as a mechanic just because, like, I get that it's cool and they want players they want to get rid of the Sigmon enchantments, and they, you know, think it's cool that they can design towards that. But like, it wasn't very fun because like, you just can't really interact. The removal is all expensive. And even when you have it, there's just like nothing you can do because they just turn your guy up out of range or, you know, whatever. Like, and I just didn't, even when I was winning, I didn't really enjoy it. Like, it was like, it's better than Avacyn Restored, but it's the same sort of thing where each player is trying to do their own thing. And you hope that your thing is better than their thing. But you can't really stop what they're doing. You just have to hope what you're doing is better.
Yeah. And I know people were like, oh, well, you should mainboard enchantment removal. Well, that's really great and all. But when you try to remove a Bestow creature, you've just created 2 creatures for yourself that you now need to deal with. And
Yeah, I had all the main deck enchantment removal. And like I said, I did well enough. But like, it just wasn't very fun.
Yeah.
See, and I had the opposite experience. But I also had a con this weekend, so I didn't actually get to play any Sealed. Nor did the people at the con, since the games were putting on, forgot to bring your basic lands. But, yeah, that's a whole other story. It could have been a much better con had that not happened. But, besides the point, like, all I've been able to do so far is draft it, and we did a Rochester draft, and then I've done 2 regular drafts. And I like the format a lot for draft. I think, I can understand what you mean with the Sealed, I can definitely see that. I think the draft is a little different because it's not like Avacyn where there's so much life gain that you just can't ever outclass your opponent because like they can swing back and gain all that life back that you just swung for. This one is very tempo based, and I think it's very much about utilizing like your monsters at the right time, not necessarily just popping it the first chance you get and stuff like that. Like, I had a really good time with it, and it goes late game, but even the aggro decks have enough reach in those late game to make their guys unblockable or something like that near the end and actually be able to kill somebody. Cause like, there's not enough life gain in the set. Outside, you know, there's a couple of spells that are pretty good, like the +1/+1 to 2 different creatures in lifelink. But there's not enough to, like, where Avacyn was, where you just had all these angels and stuff that were gaining life or preventing damage. Like, that sucked.
Yeah, like, if a 5-mana 2/4 lifelink is the best creature in your deck, there's something wrong with the format. Uh-huh. So what they wanted to happen in Avacyn Restored is they didn't want people soulbonding a bunch of dudes and then just getting, you know, it's like, I got a 6/6 soul bonded with the dude, and then they Doomblade or whatever, and you're like, oh, I guess my guy's a 2/2, and I lost 2 creatures. So that, I guess they thought that would feel bad for people. So what they took removal out, and, you know, made removal a little harder just so people would want to soul bond stuff and not be afraid to get blown out. I don't think it was because of Bestow. I actually think it was because of Monstrous that they don't have as much removal. Cause I think maybe the Bestow templating was a last minute change. Cause it's so awkward. That can't have been what they had in mind going into it. And they probably tested it. It's like, why would I pay 7 mana to put my, the Celestial Archon on a dude if, like, they're just gonna kill it in response and then I'd get 2 for 1. So that seems like a last minute thing, but if you're paying, what's Ember Swallower cost? Like 5 mana and then he's like 6 or 7 for Monstrous?
Yeah, no one's gonna pay us. 7, or 4 and yes. 6.
4 and 7.
4 and 6 or 4 and 7, yeah. Like, yeah, 7. You wanna pay all that and then just get totally, you know, blown out when you've invested all that mana in a monster? So, I guess they don't want removal because they want people playing Battlecruiser Magic. You either Voltron a dude up huge or you play a big guy and make him monstrous. So yeah.
How many games did you guys play? Was it just that one pre-release?
Dude, I played in 3. I played in 2.
Yeah.
Okay. I only had time to play 1.
I played in 2, and the first one I was very cocky about because I was playing black and I opened Erebos' whip. And Thoughtseize. So I was like, woo! I'm gonna make the best black deck ever! And I really thought that, you know, those 3 cards were gonna sort of carry me a little bit, especially the whip. I was like, I'm just gonna drop the whip and call it a day. And none of those 3 cards did anything for me against what I came up against. And,
really? The whip just crushed me when I played at the pre-release. I had a sided in the Celebrant.
I was playing black, and black's creatures felt weaker compared to the others, so I had a lot of, like, 2-power creatures, 1-power creatures, and because their creatures are so big, you know, I was charging into them just to gain that little bit of life, but it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't worth it.
Yeah, the Death Touch guy is the best card in black.
Yeah, Death Touch is insane.
That uncommon Gorgon?
Well, the Gorgon, oh, yes, that card is insane. You can't kill it.
That's just common.
Yeah,
a lot of use out of the Mogus one, where when it comes into play, you give so many black creatures haste and intimidate. That was a really neat little enter the battlefield combat trick, and then people would charge right through. That was useful to me.
I actually got crushed by the Great Merchant. I played this guy that listened to the cast, Jeffrey. He beat me. Then he had he played Great Merchant for 4, and then a couple rounds later, he played another Great Merchant for 8, and you know, it was miserable. It was like, you know. So, I don't know,
Here's my thing, like, going back to Jason's point about them not wanting players to feel bad when they take man into a guy who gets killed. It's like, I understand that that's their goal, and that's fine, I guess, like, I mean, they accomplished that goal, but if you can't ever, like, get somebody in combat, you can't really generate, like, card advantage, and you can't really, like, come from behind.
I think you can, though. Because
removal spells in hand, because like it just didn't matter because there was literally no way to get them.
Well, the enchantment removal I think should go on the actual bestowed, the creature that's being used as an aura, because then you get the blowout, because you'll get the 2 for 1 that way.
But no, you don't. No, you don't, Marcel. You get a 1 for 1 because you traded 1 card to kill 1 creature, and they still have a creature.
But if they come in and attack. They attack with the 3/3, 2/2 that has a bestow that gives it a 3/3.
I'm with you. Okay, so wait, you use a, you block it with a guy with like a, they attack with a 3-power bestowed guy. You block with a 4-toughness guy, whatever. And you kill their bestowed creature. And then your creature eats theirs in combat. Well, they still have the bestowed creature, so you traded your removal spell for their...
They don't have the bestowed creature. If you kill the bestowed creature with enchantment removal, it's gone. You kill 2 creatures for 1 spell.
If that can work, but like it can also get you blown out because those cards don't exist.
There is enchantment removal.
Point me to those instant speed enchantment removal.
All right. There's white one that gives you that 3 life.
That's a sorcery. The green one's a sorcery.
I know of one, but it's terrible, and I actually died trying to wait to get the mana for it.
I wish Boulderfall didn't cost so much mana.
Yeah.
I really like Boulderfall, because it's like, they're like, hey, let's combine the power of Lava Axe with the precision removal of Pyrotactics. And everyone's like, yeah, and let's combine their mana costs,
Marcel,
too.
No!
Oh, the green one costs 4. There's one that costs 4 for instant, yeah. Okay.
That one is an instant.
I mean,
you're more likely to get that in draft, I guess, because if your pool doesn't contain that, I guess you're boned.
One card, like, and literally, there are 3 cards in the set that say destroy target enchantment. One of them is a 1/1 for 1 red creature that takes 4 mana.
The white one is an instant. They could gain three life. No,
that's the only one. That's an instant.
There's a green one that you scribe to. That's an instant one as well. That costs four. Sure, that costs four. Yeah. But that you could do stuff with that. There's also Destructive Reverie. That's an instant. I don't think is nearly as bad, and I mean, I understand what you're saying. I agree. I believe that this is like, you know, Tron magic, and you're building too much, but, I think, you know, maybe the format is just brand new. We just barely got playing it. I think as we start playing a little bit more, I think it may make sense. It's too early to disregard it as Avacyn Restored too.
I mean, that's fair. Like, I guess it was disappointing because I was excited for the set going in. I walked out of it. The same feeling I had with Avacyn Restored is even when I'm doing well, I was just like, that didn't really feel like the kind of magic I want to play. And that's just the same feeling.
Yeah, I won a lot and didn't like it.
I will say definitely the gods felt like unfair. Whoever I heard playing against the gods, like there's pretty much not much anyone could do about them. And I don't know if that's going to be the case going on, if they're going to be like Titans or even worse than Titans in Limited, but we'll see.
I actually had more trouble with the stupid whip. I played against a guy who got up to 46 life, and I had to kill all those creatures twice to win. But I had a god in the first pool, and through four rounds, I never even turned it on.
I was very happy to see Ashiok win a lot of games. Like, there were quite a few people. There were three people that opened them in my midnight pre-release and loved it. Everybody who managed to land that card was able to win their games. And then people were really impressed with that card. And people who, you know, weren't impressed with it going into it, because a lot of people have found it very underwhelming, they were like, we'll give it a go. It's a pre-release. What the hell? And they were like, it wins me games. And I love that card. So I was very excited about that. And then on Sunday, the second pre-release, same thing. People that used it loved it. So very happy that card got some love and did some damage.
I like that card.
I do.
I brought actually a coworker of mine. He's a 50-year-old guy that has been playing since Unlimited and never been to a pre-release ever. This is his first DCI anything. And, we opened blue. We both got blue. So I got one pack. So I handed it to him and then he opened it and I got my second pack and he opened up an Elspeth and an Ashiok and a Scryland. I was like, great. I'm glad that he got it, you know. Because he was just over-enthused, like, yeah, I got to come to another one. Even though he got crushed, he 0-4 scrubbed out hard. But, nice. You know, he had a great time. So
now that we have a... Oh, go ahead.
The same. Pre-releases are still for the casual players, and they love it. So, I mean, that's what it is.
I was going to say, now that we have a little bit of experience with the set, have you guys thought about a pick of the week then? Maybe based on what you experienced? Because I know, Aaron, you said Ashiok performed a little bit better than... It did two-dimensionally, just looking at the spoiler. Is there anything you guys think is a good pickup now?
Mine isn't from Theros, because you said it didn't have to be.
Yeah. I did say that.
You did. I think Jace Architect of Thought. I know I've been really leaning towards control. Like, I really want to be control coming out of the gate, and every control build that has blue is pretty much saying you want four of them. So I made sure to get mine really early, and I remember it was really big when it first came out. Like, it was going for really crazy prices, and then it sort of dropped, and then it's like, I think it was sitting at like $10 for a while, maybe 15, and I got mine a couple months ago because I knew I would need at least four. And then when I started gold fishing with them and testing with them, it was really impressive. So I'm really glad I got my four. I think it's definitely a planeswalker that's worth having four of in a deck. And I would encourage anybody who's even remotely going control, like if it's Grixis, Esper, you know, UW, you know, anything with blue in it, make sure you have four of those because you'll want them.
I think the market's actually really bearing that out as a good pickup. It's actually seen a lot of movement in the past week.
Yeah, I know, like, our buy-in price when we all got in was, like, around $8, and it's up to 20 right now. You guys think it's going to go, like, where do you think it's going from here?
I mean, it's definitely the blue premier planeswalker. I mean, I've been playing with Jace for a while, and it does what you want it to do. Mm-hmm. And it draws cards and it protects stuff. And if there's a super friends, it's definitely could be a component. I mean, I could see it reaching 30 at some point in paper, maybe online. I mean, yeah, I could probably go up to 30. I could see it, but it's not going to be a huge jump from the 23 it's at right now. But I could definitely see it go up, and it's definitely going to be a factor in standard.
Yeah, so if you got it in an 8, it feels good.
I definitely think it got better. It was one of the few planeswalkers that got better with the new planeswalker rule, where it's like, so, you know, you do your fact of fiction light thing, and let's say you don't necessarily get what you want, and you're like, well, Jace again, fact or fiction. You know, you just get rid of the other one, and it's really good to put on top of each other.
Yeah, you can just dig through your deck so much. Oh, this puts Steam Augury. Oh, yeah, I just want to Trains of that.
It's nice that this is pretty much played out exactly how we said it would, you know, 6 months ago.
Did you?
Yeah, we called that at around $8 to $10, so we're feeling nice. Pretty good about that.
Yeah.
Who's next, fellas?
Jason.
Okay, that's fine. I'm going to pick a card that Anthony Lowry referred to as Boom Satter. This is a card that I think everybody wanted to play him in the same role as Wolfier Avenger. And I thought that was not really apropos for several reasons. Avenger was oppressive because of the regenerate. So you know, if you were a mid-range deck and you wanted to play the pseudo control role, I noticed, like, when I was playing my buddy's Jun deck, when I would just flash those in EOT and then keep the regenerate mana up, it was actually oppressive. Boonsetter doesn't really do the same things. You're not going to play him as a surprise blocker because what's he not going to trade with? Like, every 2x is just going to kill him and you're out the mana. But when I played with him, you know, at the pre-release and you'd use it as a 5-mana pump spell, it was actually just brutal. And even if they kill the creature in response, you keep a 4/2. So there's no downside to flashing him in as an enchantment. And just playing him as a 4/2 is pretty good. So this is a card that's pretty cheap. I think this is one of the few cards in the set that actually has potential to go up. So this is something I'm going to watch, and I'm probably going to, well, I traded for about 2 playsets, and I'm going to try to get a lot more. I might buy in cash. That's how good I feel about this card. And mono green in general.
Yeah, and I think this is a card in our set review that we, you know, talked about as having some potential to go up because it was so cheap. So it's good to know that, you know, your experience with it bears that out.
All right, so I'll jump in with, for paper players, even though I'm a Modo player first and I don't really do paper or anything, but, Blood Baron of Viscopa has shot up in Modo. It went up to about $18. It's still $11 in paper. So I don't know if that's price is going to realize. Go ahead.
I would say it's already moving up in paper, so you're on the right track for sure.
Okay. So it's moving. Yeah, I mean, I don't know why. I'm still torn between this and Azadat. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I like Azadat myself personally, but maybe I like Azadat so much that's my bias against Blood Baron. So I don't know. I mean, if anything, this has the potential on Modo to be a $30 card if it is going to be a 4-of in the new standard. It's 18 now. It might be good. If you want to play with it, you might have to buy in now, or it might dip down to 15 before it shoots back up. So there, but in paper, I think, you know, it'd be a good pickup to get there. I think there's still some room. I could see it being a $20-$25 card because, I mean, Sinx's Revelation is still just $20 in paper.
Nobody else. Dragon's Maze.
Yeah. Dragon's Maze is a lot less open. So it has that itself has a potential. You only have, Voice of Resurgence that's holding the value there. So, I mean, that card has a lot of potential to really just shoot up. So, I say if you're in paper, let's check that out. If you get them for trades, go ahead and do it.
Okay. I'll go next and talk about, actually the same card I talked about last week, and that being Elspeth. I remember last week we talked about the Elspeth pre-order price on some big sites was $30, and it was, you know, available for like 20 to 25 elsewhere. And I said that, I thought it was the Planeswalker most likely to increase in price. Just after some testing with it, seeing how powerful it was. And it's up to $30, $35 right now, mid price on TCG players. So I think, I mean, obviously that call worked out. So what I'll say about this card now is that you want to get rid of them. I think, you know, maybe it'll climb up to 40 in the first week or two. Maybe it'll even, you know, do the Jace thing from last year and hit 50. But if you got in at, you know, 25 or whatever, I think you're probably going to be better off moving them in this first week, when the price can, you know, move up to 35 to 40 before, you know, copies start flooding the market. So that's my pick is, if you can get some Elspeth, now that it's gone up like we thought it would, get rid of them.
Huh. That's a nice 1-2 punch there, week to week, Corbin. I like that.
Well, I do agree though, but yeah, Elspeth is a nice car, but it's not going to be more than a 2-0.
Yeah. I think that's a perfect example of those planeswalkers you really don't need 4 of in your deck.
Yeah. And everyone wants them. They want them first.
Yeah.
So what about you, Ryan? What's your pick of the week?
I think my pick of the week is going to be Temples this week. They are, it's interesting to me that they're, rares and that people are like looking at them as, you know, oh, they can't hit more than $5, and yet we've seen 2 years in a row now, both the rare cycles of lands hitting more than this price. And I think Theros will be opened a little more, but I mean, there was the same kind of hype that Ravnica had too last year. So I don't see why these can't be $8 cards, especially for the ones that are being control color. Like the aggro colored ones, typically, like, you're still not wanting to go turn one comes into play tap land. But anything with blue in them, those temples are going to be expensive, and you can find them as cheap as four right now. I can't see no reason to be trading for them at four to five if you can get them.
Do you think they'll go lower, Ryan? Do you think they'll go like, you know, like two to three, like Scars?
I think some of them will. I think some of them will, but I don't think the control ones will, because the control players are already adapting them.
Yeah, you're going to play them. They're pretty good in control decks.
They're good. Just, yeah,
like, yeah, it's something where you can keep a kind of a loose hand. Like, it's great, because if you kept a loose hand with a control deck and you're like, oh, well, I can ponder and hope to flip my Delver, that was one thing. But now, like, the Jun players are like, ah, oh, this is a little loose, but that top card's, you know, something I can shuffle away.
You're fixing it with your lands. I mean, I'm sorry, I've been really against these lands, and I still don't think they should be rares, but the fact that they are rares is what it is, and that's what standard is, and they're good cards, regardless of whatever.
I want all of these at $5 for sure. Yeah. I traded for these hardcore at the pre-release.
I don't know that I want all of them. I think there's certain colors. These are very, very much so affected, similar to the comes into play tap cycle. Like, I don't know. I think it's gonna be tough because turn one in aggro is very important right now. Like, you don't really have the aggro decks that are starting on turn two. Like, there's mid-range decks that can play them, but the hardcore aggro, either the mono white deck, well, obviously mono white wouldn't need them anyway. But, you know, the Rakdos decks and stuff like that, I don't think they could afford them. And granted, the Rakdos deck doesn't have hits either, so I guess that's irrelevant.
The only one with the red.
But the cool part about it is there's no other option. So if you're going to play a two-colored deck, you're going to play two of the Shocks, and you're going to play two of these, because...
You're playing Shocks.
I mean, four and four, you'll play Sets of Each, because that's all you have, unless you want to play Gates. But then, why would you play Gates when you have this, which is an obvious bonus?
I agree. You have to play. Here's my thought on them. I agree that they're really good pickups, and I think $4 is a fine price. I also think that they're going to be $4 a month from now, and 2-3 months from now, they may be $2. You know, like, we would, Seachrome Coast hit $2 a couple years ago and then hit 20 the next year. Like, I definitely think there's money to be made on them, and there's nothing wrong trading for them at $4. I think the way, if they're $4 now, it stands to reason that they will likely be less than $4 in a couple months.
I honestly think the Pro Tour could change that.
Yeah, I would say, though I would agree with you normally, you have to remember, we have TCG player states, and the Pro Tour all within 2 weeks of each other, because the two are overlapping. Like, and that's a lot of coverage, and that's a lot of Magic people are seeing for them not to, you know, be looking at what the deck list, and if they keep saying 4x temple, 4x temple, 4x temple, that card's going up. I don't care what
you say. Anyone not expecting decks to be 4x temple right now?
No, but on coverage, when you actually see how the scry is working and how it's actually...
But see, that's the trap with these cards, though, is it really is about the scry. And scry is something that does fall back on knowing how to scry, knowing, you know, what you're looking for. And I saw a lot of people this weekend that really liked the lands. Like, there were people that, again, went into the pre-release with the notion of these are going to be terrible. And they gave the lands a try, and they're like, well, I opened them. They were my rare. You know, we'll give it a go. And I watched them sort of scry themselves stupid, that, you know, we're just like, I don't need this card. And then they throw it under and be like, I should have kept that card. And it's like, yeah, you should have.
Yeah.
I think scry is something people are going to need to learn how to use.
And I love that. I think it's a carrot for, you know, people to get better at. And I think for people that are advanced players and have been around this game, it gives, you know, us a leg up in a way. Cause it makes it more skill intensive. It's like Steam Augury. It's like, you know, there's more and more cards that seem to be making this game.
Yeah.
You have a way that you get the advantage. You could definitely get this happening.
I could be wrong here, but wasn't it Nick Spagnolo who wrote an article on like how to preordain a couple years ago that was like the turn one preordain is not always right.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what you need at that point. Now I may be attributing the article wrong, but I think I remember it being very important at the time is you don't always want to preordain on turn one. Like, a lot of, you don't know what you need on turn one. You know what you need on turn three or four, and that's when your preordain's the strongest. Unless you're obviously digging for lands.
I had the problem with Thoughtseize. Like I said, I opened Thoughtseize for Midnight, and I was so excited to use it. And I don't play any older formats, really, so I don't have any experience with it. But it looked simple enough, so there were times it'd be like Thoughtseize. And because I was so unfamiliar with Theros to begin with, in a sealed format, you know, I would look at their hands and be like, Jesus, like, do I... like, do I pay two life for this? Or I'd look at my hand and that. And that's another tricky card I think people are going to be so, you know, jumping to use because it's such a popular card. But again, it takes there's some skill behind it. And, you know, what is really worth paying two life for? Or sometimes you look at a hand and you realize there's nothing you really want to pay that for, but I believe you have to. And, that's another skill intensive card for sure.
It's funny. Yeah. I'm wondering if, because I think Sting Augury is a trap, and I think Fire Drinker Setter is a trap, because everyone's like, oh, Jackalpup used to be good. Oh, Fact of Fiction used to be good. I wonder if Thoughtseize were like, oh, Thoughtseize is good, and then, like, it's just not going to be all that good.
Jackalpup 2.0, I could see as a trap. Sting Augury, totally not. I played against that card. Yeah. I played
is
against
it as good? Because it seems like a really bad Fact of Fiction.
No.
It's a really good Fact of Fiction.
It's actually good. So much, even against a good player. Like, cause I played against someone in my third round of my free release. He had a better Izzet deck than I had, but we were grinding it out. We were getting to it. He cast that and he just looked at his cards and he laid it out in the worst possible way for me ever. Like, I couldn't choose one or the other that I both were. I just wanted to kill myself. And I, like, here, take three cards because I didn't want you to get these two. And it just was like, it leaves so much that you can craft with that. Like, yes, your opponent picks it, but you can create an ugly versus ugly situation every time.
90% of the time, it says draw three cards.
Like, if you're ahead and if you get two piles that your opponent can't even.
You don't play enough to I'm sorry. No,
that's what the scenario described. Like, my opponent was ahead and I couldn't get back into it because.
No, it's like you got a wedge. You got a control deck and all of a sudden you option, okay, well, we can go down this decision path or this decision path, and both of them means that you lose the game. And this is what it is. It's not win more, but it's just putting the nail in the coffin. With Jace, one thing I've learned with Jace is like, when you get those two cards from Jace and you got the choice, and they split up the piles and you get the two cards, you're winning. Like, you're feeling like a champion. And here you get the chance of getting those two cards guaranteed and probably get three. And that's when they even split. Sometimes there's going to be one for four splits, and that four split is going to be in your favor. And they think that one card is going to be the one that breaks them. It's actually the four cards that you're going to get that's going to break them. It's just, it's too good of a card. I mean, I would pick it up, but it's like $4. I mean, I just think that card is going to be.
At $3, and we said it wasn't a bad pickup. And since then, I'd actually kind of cooled off on it. I mean, it's still $3. What do you think about it at that price?
I like it a lot. The problem I have with it is there's only going to be one or two decks that can run it. At most, you're going to have Grixis and probably American. And American is honestly, like, the testing we've been doing and the testing I've been hearing people do, American's just worse than blue-white. It can't beat strict blue-white because it's just not the same kind of control deck. So that hurts that card's playability.
That's
if this could see play in more decks, I would really like it. I don't think there's enough decks out there to warrant me wanting to go pick it up. Yeah. I think in the future, it will end up being an $8 card at some point. I don't think that's tomorrow. I don't think that's next week.
You know what? I probably agree with that. I think it's going to take a while for people to figure out how to play this card correctly.
I think it is very good. I think it warrants being an $8 card. I think at some point it could warrant being a $10 card. There could be three decks that play it, but it's just not today. Like, not right going into states, not when people are right just figuring out the format. It's going to take time, like you said, Marcel, for people to figure out that this card is as good as it is. And it's going to take that one deck to put it over the top that can really abuse it.
Okay.
Shocklands. Yeah,
I don't know about that card.
Jason, I heard you got a bone to pick about Shocklands.
Okay, so what happened was I had a really bad morning. And that's how all good stories start out, right? So I made, you know, the mistake of part of my morning routine is just kind of seeing if anything happened on Reddit. And,
Why?
I gotta check the finance subreddit. The finance subreddit is my baby. Okay.
Oof. Have you heard my metaphor of what I look at Reddit as?
What is it, please tell us?
Okay. I look at Reddit like looking for a Fendi purse at Goodwill. Like, yeah, you might find a really good find amongst all the crap, but usually you just find crap. Like.
And you spend all day shuffling through it, right?
Exactly.
I'm the knockoff Fendi salesman trying to stock the Goodwill shelves. Like, I'm not there looking. I'm there trying to help people out because I'm an idiot.
But they don't want it. They throw it away and stomp at it.
You know what?
Everybody's coach, right?
I got to tell you that subreddit has gotten – I used to bitch about it a lot more. It's gotten a lot better lately. Corbin will attest to that.
Do they know that it's you, like, when you post in it? Do they know that you're Jason?
They do.
Maybe you're like mean mom. Maybe you're like the mom from Muppet Babies, where the Muppet Babies are really rowdy and rambunctious, and then you walk in the room and they stop. Like they're really bitchy and moaning. Shh, Jason Ott's coming. Look professional. And then they start talking intellectually and they know
what
they're
talking
about.
Well, because everything that gets posted there is visible all day, so.
Oh, okay.
No. Anyway. You derailed the shit from me, so I'm going to start over.
Well, hey, shout out to Jeffrey. He beat me in round four to take the 3-1. He actually listened to our cast, and we're the only Magic cast he listened to because of subreddit. So,
cool. That. Yeah, I mean, it's gotten a lot better. I think any new forum, when people don't realize it's not a, like, hey, make me money. Should I buy this card? Should I sell this card? Type of posts. It's gotten a lot better. So, I went in to see what was up, and there's something I keep seeing over and over in that subreddit where someone will ask, hey, should I sell this card? And the top voted, like, 10 upvotes, 0 downvotes is always, yeah, sell that card and buy Shocklands. And I'm just sick of reading that because I think it's wrong. And I wasn't going to say anything because it seemed like the whole finance community is like, oh, yeah, Shocklands are great. Buy real estate. They're solid. They're going to hit $20. It just seemed like everybody was against me, so I just finally snapped. And I was like, no, don't buy fucking Shocklands. Rawr. And then immediately my inbox blew up on Reddit and there was like a bunch of, it wasn't even in a post about Shocklands. It was about that dragon. Some guy's like, should I sell the dragon that I got? And they're like, yeah, buy Shocklands. I'm like, no. And, so I, you know, people started just like getting like foaming at the mouth, like, yeah, you're an idiot. And I was like, oh my God, delete, delete. I just deleted every post I made referencing the Shocklands. Not because I'm embarrassed or I thought I was wrong. I just didn't want to like every time I got on there have to have the same Shockland fight in every thread. Mm-hmm. So I deleted it, but people were like reposting, like copy pasting. And so it wasn't going away, and I was finally like, you know what, fuck it, I'm actually going to address this. So this was Monday morning. You know, the cast is going out Friday, this was Monday. I was like, I gotta write my QS article today, and just, I was so bummed out the whole day, because of just all that nastiness, all the mean shit people said. Like, people that I don't...
Don't let it get to you, Jason, yeah, stop
but
that.
It bummed me out, so I wrote half a QS article. I wrote like 500 words, and it took me like 3 hours. It's just miserable. I normally love writing my QS article. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do that since there was pre-releases, there was no GP or SCG Open to talk about. I'll do the second half about Shocklands. I said, screw it. So I wrote out what I thought. My feeling is I don't think they're as safe an investment as people think. I think if you got in at 5, they're pretty good to sell around 15. That's a good move. I don't think they're going to hit 25 ever because they were 25 before they announced Return to Ravnica. And I don't think Modern, with them being run as like a 3 of max, you know, is going to give enough additional demand to make them, you know, go up. And I certainly don't think they'll maintain their current demand when they rotate out a standard based on Modern. They're not played in Legacy at all. So I kind of said I didn't think they were a good investment. And then, you know, for whatever reason, somebody in Reddit started a Shockland post, and it seemed like people were coming out of the woodwork that agreed with me and just didn't want to say anything. So I guess I was the first one to open my mouth and take that risk. And if I end up being like super wrong, I'm going to look like an idiot. But at the same time, I couldn't stay silent anymore because I really don't think that if a new person getting into finance sees people saying, yeah, buy Shocklands, and they buy in at 12 or 15, I don't think that's good. I think it's too late to buy in. I think you can trade into them at their current retail. That's probably fine. But I wouldn't pay cash for Shocklands, and I certainly wouldn't wait for them to hit 20 or 25. Cause I know that a lot of copies are in the inventories of speculators. So I think if people are waiting for 20 or 25 or something, there's going to be a massive sell-off if they, you know, hit a nice high plateau. And I think that could collapse the price. And I think a lot of people that bought in at 12 are just going to lose their ass when they go to 8. So I would really caution people not to buy in now. What do you guys
think? Sure. I'll chime in on this because I guess, you and I have gone round and about on this, and a lot of people have, you know, brought this up to me because I know I was the person who hoarded all the Misty Rainforests or whatever after Zendikar, and then I said I was doing the same with Shocklands. What I think people don't understand is the timing behind of it. When I was saying spec on Shocklands was 9 months ago, when Return to Ravnica had been out for 4 months, and they were all really low because the market had been flooded with them, and that's when I got in on a whole bunch of them. And then the same a few months after Gatecrash, and I just picked all of these up in that time period. The time to pick them up is not now. Like, they're already going up. like all those cheap copies out there are not there anymore. Now they're creeping up. So like at this point, if you're trying to spec into them, you're buying on near the top rather than near the bottom. And you're chasing that last 10%, in my opinion. And I don't know if it would actually be 10%, but like a lot of them right now are between like 10 and 12, and maybe they'll go to, I think they can probably go to like 14 to 15. At which point, you know, that's kind of my target to sell. But what people may not understand is that when I was saying get into them, I was saying get into them, you know, $5 ago, not now. But I think people never really got the cutoff on that. So now they're just like, oh yeah, Shocklands are always played. You have to get into them. This is the time. Now's the time. They still get in the shocks because it's just a great call.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I think people should have got in sooner, but I do think there's some room to grow on the Shocklands. I don't think they're a completely worthless investment. I don't think they could go down to $8, and I think they'll be in the $15 to $20 range as they rotate, as we move into Theros in there. There'll be some at 10, but it'll definitely be most of them in the $15 to $20 range, and I mean, that's not a whole lot on some of them to get, so you're not going to double up your money, and you should have got in sooner. Emoto, they're still like $4 now, under $4, under $5 for some, and I still think there's a chance for them to be around $10 cards and definitely post-rotation. I mean, Shocklands are going to be played in Modern pretty much forever. They're going to be this de facto dual land in Modern forever. We're not going to see another reprint of Shocklands because we got such a influx of Shocklands. There's not going to be another reprint. So, not anytime soon. I could probably say in about five to seven years, we're not going to see another Shockland reprint. So, I mean, sure, they're not going to be a great room. They're not going to be like, oh, this is a great investment, but I don't think they're a bad investment, per se.
Okay, so let's also clear this up. I think another misconception that people have is that, either they're saying this or they think, you know, people who know what they're talking about are saying this, is that you shouldn't get rid of them because they're always going to be played in Modern. And that's just not true. Like, the original theory behind getting into them was Modern Season is going to be in the winter, which is going to overlap with Standard Rotation. That creates this perfect storm of people needing Shocklands, and it's going to make them go up. So that took a hit when they moved Modern Season to the summer, okay? So, like, they're still going up now, like, and they've been coming up for the last month because of the Standard Rotation. So I think what you do is, here in about 3 to 6 months, you probably sell them because they're going to be at the height of their price. And I don't think rotation is going to drop them a ton. The comparison to fetch lands, if you look at like Misty Rainforest did not move like when rotation happened. It was $10 in like, August, and it was $10 in December, you know, through rotation. But what did happen is it went down from 20 to 15 to 10 while it was in standard. So even if Shocklands don't necessarily see a drop at rotation, I think they'll see a drop leading up to rotation. I don't think that they'll, if they hit 15 to 20, I don't think they'll be 15 to 20 come October.
On Moto, they did take a hit come rotation, and I think you do have a good point. I think you should, if you're trying to get out and you're not in for the long term, then dump your Shocklands near the middle of Theros block, somewhere in that range between
There's two windows. I mean, you get out of them when the height at their playing standard, price comes back down towards the end of standard season, you get back in for that long term hold.
And I think you still have the opportunity, yeah, but I still think even if you buy them now and you're waiting for 2 or 3 years as the long-term hold, I don't think you could just not worry about it and you'll still be alright.
I think what I said in my article was there's a lot more money to be made buying Verdant Catacombs at 35 than there is buying Overgrown Tomb at 15 though. Or 12. I think there's some nuance that people are missing. They heard us say 9 months ago buy Shocklands and they've been saying that for the last 9 months. You got, if you're new to finance and you don't quite grasp all the nuances, it's dangerous to just parrot some, you know, old chestnuts that everybody's repeating if you don't really understand when to get in, when to get out, and why exactly people were saying Shocklands were a good investment. Cause I think some people could make some mistakes and think, oh, well, it's always good to buy real estate and they buy in now. I think that's dangerous. And I think if people have a plan, that's fine. But if they're just like, oh, these are going to go up forever and I, you know, can just buy them at will now and I'll make money later. I think you really need to have a plan and I think you need to watch out for a few pitfalls.
Yeah, so,
I
mean, Aaron.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to segue out. So, Aaron, I hear that you're building this control deck. And so what do you... What's your thoughts about Shocklands, and what cards are you picking up, and what's going on for you as far as like finance in your?
Oh Jesus, I've gotten very spoiled since I started my podcast and since I got picked up by Legit, because I don't really pay for singles anymore. So I don't feel the loss that other people feel when they pay for something with their own money, and let's say a card doesn't perform or they don't use it. I use store credit, so it wasn't like I really lost anything. So I'm sort of numb to that, and I freely admit that, and I wish I could relate to that. Like, I don't mean to sound spoiled, but that's just how I feel. And I'm not really an expert in finance, but what I will say is I can understand where Jason's coming from, because Shocklands just don't seem to have the same weight that they will in Theros Black as they do now, because, you know, with people running three colors and four colors and craziness, they wanted any dual land they could get their hands on. So it was really important to have the four of the Shocklands, and the Shocklands also enabled your buddy lands. In Theros Black, a Shockland is just a Shockland, which some people will say is enough, and some people will say is worth the money alone. But it doesn't help your scry land. It doesn't help your guild gates. It just comes into play. And you can choose to pay your two life, which is great, but, you know, it just doesn't have the same versatility as it did right now, and I can see why that might make it less valuable, at least to me. People are running more basic lands, especially with a lot of people predicting that two colors is the way to go. You know, they just aren't as important as they should be.
Plus, people don't want to die to Burning Earth, which I think is an actual real possibility.
Yeah, Burning Earth was the big boogeyman for the last couple of weeks, and I saw a lot of good decks fold to it. And it's still an argument that keeps coming up, is, oh, Burning Earth is a thing. And as long as it's a thing, I think that's going to be something people consider when they build their decks. I was planning on going Esper. Like, I was one of those people who was looking at the block constructed decks to sort of decide where to go. And I really liked the decks that were like two Etherling, two Obsidot, and a bunch of Esper stuff. I thought that was really cool. I don't like just relying on two Etherling. Like, that kind of bothers me. So if I can have some other win condition, like maybe two Elzabeth or two Obsidot, I'm in. I don't like the idea of going two colors. I really like the idea of UWR. I really like the idea of Grixis, but I'm kind of waiting to see. I have an Esper deck built. I'll be playing Esper this Friday at FNM, but I'm really not sure what to do. It does seem like people are saying UW is the way to go, and I'm really hoping that's not the case, and maybe it's better than we thought.
Yeah, I want to see more three-color decks. At least in control.
The problem we found is that adding the extra color is rarely worth the headache with the mana.
Don't say that.
I mean, it's really true. If you're going to be three color, you almost have to be green. I've had pretty good luck with a Bant list I'm testing, which involves such all-stars as Time Ebb. Yes, that's right.
What?
No, Time Ebb, you know what?
I'm running a two of because so when good. You go like turn two Azorius Charm, turn three Time Ebb versus like Rakdos or Mono White, it's pretty devastating. And it gets you set up for Tristani, Advent of the Worm, stuff like that on four. I'm only running a two up, but it's a goofy card, but it's actually what you need.
Hmm.
So most of the block decks, the control deck that came out was black, white, red, was it not? Or blue, black, white, Esper. Yeah. That was what the kind of the prevailing one was, right? It wasn't straight blue, white.
Towards the end, I was seeing a bit more. I actually have the top eight list from Pro Tour Dragon's Maze. There was some UWR flash there. There was some Grixis there. Grixis especially seemed to be making a splash, at least in the list that I was seeing. Like, people were doing the Ral'Zaric thing, and right.
If you look at the dailies, I think things changed quite a bit.
Yeah. So it seemed like it was anyone's game.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, because then you take into account, do these decks fold to Burning Earth and so on and so forth. So.
Well, I think the main concern right now is everybody's expecting people to play aggro right after a rotation because it's sort of safe. So I think the question is, you know, can they weather the aggro storm? If aggro is a thing and if it's as fast as people think it is, you know, can three color control afford to dirtle with the tapped lands and things like that?
It's the same thing we worried about last year going in, and you know, everybody thought zombies was going to be this dominating force and all such things, and like it just never ends up being that way. Like inevitably, control ends up being where you're at.
Yeah, because I mean, control got Sphinx's Revelation out the bat, and is good. That's the backbone, and we go from there. And
it just takes longer for the control decks to get dialed in. The thing we had last time was the zombies deck was so obvious, no one built a different aggro deck. And so when Jerry Thompson talked about that zombies deck in every one of his articles for 2 months, then he showed up, oh, hey, by the way, I built a deck that pulls zombies' pants down, and I'm going to play it four times today and KO it every time. Like, that's what happened. It's not that control got solved earlier than normal. I think it's just that, like, everybody knew what the one aggro deck was going to be and built right. to beat that. But I think Marcel's right. We Control's got a lot of tools off the bat because Blue-White has Sphinx's Revelation, Detention Sphere, and Supreme Verdict, which I think are going to be three of the most powerful five cards going forward.
And so, they got Scrylands, and I hate to say those are this, the lynch.
Well, in what if your Blue-White acts, in, like, what Scryland do you have, though? Yeah. I don't...
Oh, yeah.
Black, there's blue-green, there's red-white.
Blue-black.
White, red-white.
You got the red-white land, and then if you're going to play
if you're Esper, Grixis, you're blue-black and black-white.
Yeah. I think Grixis actually has a chance. Chad, he was a fan of the cast. I was playing with him on Moto Beta, and he had a pretty interesting white-black-red deck that he had, and I tweaked around with it, and it was pretty sick. And actually, I believe Jerry Thompson did a article about it, and it's kind of like the same kind of Jund-style grinding out attrition deck. And I've been winning nothing a bunch of games with it, and it's pretty sick. So absolutely. I think Control is well positioned, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, I'm of the opinion that you can't play Control without playing Sphinx's Revelation.
Right.
Like whatever Control deck you come up with is just not going to be better than this Control deck with Sphinx's Revelation.
I could probably.
Unless you have maybe Steam Augury, that could be the one thing that saves Grixis.
I don't know. You don't have the life gain, like.
Grixis also lacks the reliable sweepers, where it's like, okay, so they have Anger of the Gods, which is 3 damage, which is great, don't get me wrong, and Lord knows it deals with the voices and things like that, but you still need 2 red for that, which in a 3-color format with iffy lands could be tough, and it is only 3 damage. And then after that, you have Mizzium Mortars, which is 4 damage, and again costs 6 to do the overload, so I that really worries me is the lack of a reliable board wipe. Whereas with Azorius or even Esper, if things get rough, you can get off a turn 4 Verdict and you could reasonably be all right. Even playing BG Rock, I could get a turn 4 Mutilate off and be okay, but having to wait a lot longer to maybe clear your board, that's the reason why I'm a mono black girl, and I'm one of those people where I truly believe that mono black someday will be a thing. And we got a lot of really good pieces in Theros, and then there were people that were like, okay, if we just have a black board wipe, we could do this. Mono black can be a thing, and we were really, really waiting for it, and we didn't get a black board wipe. And I believe that that's going to be the thing that keeps mono black from coming out in this set, is we never got our board wipe. So a board wipe is really important for decks like that, and I don't think Grixis's options are strong enough.
Yeah. You know what? They gave us Mutilate, and we did not care.
Yeah, I loved Mutilate.
And Rotten,
I mean, it
eventually made it. It was definitely a main component. And on Emoto, at least, it went up to $4. We say buy in at around $1. And maybe you guys didn't make no money, but Emoto made some money.
I mean, Black Green became a thing with Mutilate. It was just late in the cycle. Yeah,
it was like 30 seconds before rotation.
I mean,
everyone's like, oh, this card's really good, and we have the Demon.
Actually, it was the whole since Dragon's Mace. Or no, M14, right? It was right. Jeff Hulu.
Well, it started off online first. It had a really big following on Magic Online, and he was the one who sort of made it popular in paper. And I really liked his version. His version was a lot more control-y. Like, I followed him in his builds, and I copied his builds pretty to the letter, and I really liked where he was going. A lot of the other builds were really like, they were trying to do this, just, it was very simple, I guess you could say, and his was a little more complicated, and it was more fun. I really enjoyed it.
I actually didn't like his main deck, Lifebane Zombies, instead of Xeros Messenger. I thought Messenger was a better card to have. I can understand why he did the Lifebane, maybe for the meta and Thragtusk and the Restoration Angels, you're hitting a lot, but if there's nothing in their hands or late game like that, Messenger is so backbreaking.
But see, the problem I had with Messenger was when I went up against Jund, and the problem is when they get a Garrick online, then you can't get through that wall of beasts with Intimidate. I was able to get through and hit Garrick when I couldn't have otherwise, when they would just create beasts and my Messenger would run into them and Garrick would get bigger, and it got ugly. So I enjoyed it for that reason. Same with Domri Raid, you know, that people would throw a bunch of blockers in front of you, intimidate your way through, and keep Domri down.
Well, Marcel, maybe you can tell Jeff Hoogland to his face that you didn't like his build.
Actually, I did.
Possible. Okay, because we're looking at maybe having Jeff on the cast next week.
Hope
very
so.
Nice guy.
Yep. So, listeners, tune in for that. I think that's about all the time we have this week. Aaron, did you have any shout outs you wanted to do or anything?
Not particularly. I'm just really happy to be here. This was a big deal for me, and I appreciate you guys having me. It was very last minute, and I'm glad you accommodated me. And just shout out to Legit MTG and Medina, who's sort of, you know, been back behind the scenes trying to get the site still going. And, it's a very good site and I'm very proud to be a part of it. And, yeah, just everybody who's been nice enough to come on the show and listen to the show. And I'm just happy to be here in the community. So thanks for letting me play in your playground.
It's all good. So what is your show for everyone that they forgot from the beginning?
My show is called The Deck Tease. You can find it on legitmtg.com. You can also find it on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. The show does have its own Twitter account at The Deck Tease. I do have my own personal Twitter account at Original Estrus, which is OriginalOestrus. And my email is estrus@elitistdirks.com. So if you want to reach me, you can do it through any of those avenues. And I'm pretty good at responding to people. I'm not one of those jerks who doesn't do that. So I'm pretty on the ball with that.
The person with the elitist jerks email address is not an elitist jerk.
I am. I'm just very subtle about it.
She's actually a pretty good interviewer. So if you want to check out some of her interviews, and they're not the type of cast that go old with time. So,
no.
It's, yeah, check it out, people.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun coming on the Deck Tease. I'm glad I could return the favor.
But yeah. Jason was a little, I expected more steam in the room, and Jason was pretty dry.
Yeah, I didn't really know what I could get out of him, so I kind of played it smart. But I think if you came on, Marcel, we could have a pretty wicked time.
Yeah, that would be awesome, actually.
That would be a dirty show for sure.
So yeah, so check us out next week and listen to the Deck Tease. There you go. Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.